Dr. Ashok Goel is a professor of computer science and cognitive science in the School of Interactive Computing at Georgia Institute of Technology. He is director of the school's PhD program in human-centered computing, coordinator of the faculty consortium on creativity, learning, and cognition, and coordinator of the faculty consortium on interactive intelligence. Dr. Goel is the editor-in-chief of AAAI's AI magazine and an associate editor of the Design Science Journal published by the Design Search Society. I must tell the audience that Association of Advancement of AI, shortly called AAAI, is one of the top scientific research societies of the world and has been working in the field of AI since 1979. In addition to AAAI, the Dr. Goel also serves on the steering committees of the Association of Computing Machinery Conference on Creativity and Cognition and the ACC Conference on Computational Creativity. His area of research include artificial intelligence, cognitive science, and human-centered computing with a focus on computational design and creativity. In 2016, he designed an intelligence laboratory developed Jill Watson, a virtual teaching assistant for answering questions in online education. Dr. Goel's current project explores analogical thinking and system thinking in biologically inspired engineering design, visual thinking on intelligent tests, and meta thinking in game playing agents. A related project focuses on system thinking and meta thinking in learning about ecological systems in middle school science and about biological systems in interdisciplinary education in biologically inspired design. Today, Dr. Ashok Goel will be enlightening the audience on a topic, using AI to teach AI. May I now request Dr. Goel to kindly deliver his talk.
Thank you very much. I'm honored to be here. It's my absolute pleasure, and I want to thank you for inviting me here. And thank you to all of you for inviting me. I especially appreciate Commander Bharadeswal's graciousness in helping me prepare for this. I'd love to talk with you today about using AI to teach AI. And this really has a double meaning that I'm not going to tell you right away. I'll tell you, you'll see the meaning of what I mean by double meaning as we go along. Towards the end, I'll make a twist that I think you're going to enjoy. So next slide, please. Okay, so I really want to talk about two questions. So the first question is, how can we make higher education accessible and affordable? You know, there is the COVID-19 global pandemic is all over the world. Everywhere, higher education has become online, effectively online, blended sometimes. And so the answer that I have, next slide, please, is that we make higher education affordable and accessible to millions of people, even during the global pandemic, by going online, which a lot of people, what a lot of places are doing. So let's answer number one. I'll indicate how we can do it really well. Next slide, please. The second question is, well, you know, we can make online education accessible and affordable so that millions of people can take it, or tens of millions, or hundreds of millions. But how do we make it high quality? How do we make it efficient so that learners can learn efficiently? How do we make it effective? As effective as classroom, physical classroom education of the kind that you may get from individual tutors, for example. So we want to aim both for accessibility and affordability on one side and for high quality, efficiency, and effectiveness on the other side. So next slide, please. And my answer to that is going to be, let's use AI. Okay, so the move, I'm going to make two intellectual moves here. The first is going online, and the second is going to be using AI in a data-driven manner, and you know that will connect with the theme of your webinar as you go along. Next slide, please. Okay, so the first question, let's look at that. How can you make higher education accessible and affordable? Next slide, please. So a few years back, in 2014 to be exact, Georgia Tech, my university, launched the online Master of Science in Computer Science program. Now, this program that we call OMSCS, next slide, please, Commander Bhai. That's the largest program in the United States. In spring 2014, we started with 200 students. Now we have about 10,000 students completely online. This is approximately 10% of all master's students in the United States. And these are globally distributed. So many of them are coming from India. Excellent students. I mean, brilliant students. Indian students tend to be among the best. And many of them are coming from India. Highly selective program, fully accredited. In fact, when we give a diploma to students in online master's in computer science, we don't say online, because we are guaranteeing that the quality is as high as our residential program. So we had that much confidence. And it costs only $7,000 or $8,000 in tuition fee. Now, compare the $7,000 or $8,000 in tuition fee for the entire Master's of Science in Computer Science program to the $70,000, $80,000 that it might cost in general, because if you are going to come and live in Atlanta, you need to pay for boarding and lodging and all the travel expenses. And now those expenses go away completely. It's just tuition fee. For about $7,000, you can get a master's in computer science from a well-known university. Next slide, please. So as part of that, David Joyner, who was at that time my student, now he's my colleague, he and I started a class in knowledge-based artificial intelligence. I'll tell you a little bit about it because this class turned out to be quite popular and, according to the students, quite successful. Next slide, please. So what was the goal here? So now I'm talking about how to make higher education accessible and affordable. And $7,000 and $8,000 is for a master's in computer science, a lot more affordable than $70,000 or $80,000. So we're reducing cost by order of magnitude. So we wanted to do this because we wanted to take knowledge-based AI or cognitive systems, another name for knowledge-based AI, across the world to everyone. Normally, when I teach a class, I can reach about 100 students in a physical classroom. But now, using this online method, I can use reach 1,000 students. So my reach as a teacher improves. At the same time, we wanted to use lessons coming from learning sciences, from psychology, and apply them to online learning. You'll see how. We also want to do research and use AI to support online learning. I'll show you some examples of that in just a minute. So I'm on the first part of the talk now, just talking about how to make a higher education accessible and affordable. Next slide, please, Commander Deswal. So the methodology that we use was design-based research, and that simply means that we start an educational intervention, then we do a lot of evaluation, formative assessment, and then we iterate the process. So we have now been doing it for about 6 years, and in 6 years we have taught, because we teach a section every semester, so we have taught about 16, 17 classes of this kind. And we do a quasi-experimental study, and I'll show you some results. And if we compare the performance of the online students with the performance of the residential students to make sure that the quality of online education is as good. Now, you know that typically when we talk about online education, there are concerns about it. Is the quality high enough? And you will see through this quasi-experimental studies, by doing a comparative analysis of the two classes, we can show that the quality is about as high. So, next slide, please. Okay, so this course is a 16-week course. We created 26 one-hour video lessons, and each lesson is segmented so that there are interactive exercises. So in the first time, every 6 minutes, there is an interactive exercise. The first time, about 200 students took it, and in parallel, about 75 students took the residential class. So I mentioned this because we'll do a comparative analysis. The grading is blind in that we have a team of human teaching assistants. We'll come to AI teaching assistants in a minute. We have a team of human teaching assistants, and when they are grading, they don't know whether the paper or the homework or the project is coming from the online class or the residential class. So that sense is blind, because we wanted to see whether students in the online class were doing as well as in the residential class. Next slide, please, Bharat. Okay, so we use a number of strategies coming from learning sciences and educational sciences. I'll show you examples of that. So learning by example is, you know, just showing lots of examples of how to do it. Learning by doing is a very powerful learning strategy. You want to enable learners to actually do things, not just listen passively to some lecture. And so there are lots of strategies here. I'll talk right now, because of limited time, only about two strategies: learning by doing and project-based learning. Next slide, please. So I mentioned that in these videos, when people watch videos, they get very tired and very bored very quickly. We didn't want that. So every 6 minutes, there is an exercise of the kind that's shown here. So in this particular exercise, we don't have very too much of the technical details as to do with an AI exercise, but essentially there are some prisoners and guards on one side of the river, and they have to go to the other side of the river. I expect you know about this. There is only one boat available that can take only a prisoner and a guard and so on. And how can you take all the prisoners and the guards from one bank of the river to the other bank of the river? Given that, if the number of prisoners at any time is higher than the number of guards, then they can overcome the guards. So this is a problem in planning in AI. So we are given the initial problem, and we are now asking the learner, the student, the master student, to tell us what the next state is going to be using the AI method of planning that we had just discussed in this particular class. Next slide, please. And so then the student gives an answer. I think there'll be one person left on the, one, two here is, there'll be one prisoner, one guard on the left side, and two prisoners, two guards on the right side. And so now, behind this exercise, we have built a small little intelligent tutor. Next slide, please. And the intelligent tutor understands the answers that the students are giving. Here, the answers are numerical, but the answers could be in natural language also. And if the tutor does not like the answer, then it can say, well, this is not the right answer, try again. And it gives an explanation for why this is not the right answer. So it looks like there is a few problems with the answer. In the first box, the boat would have to move from the left to the right. We don't have to go into technical details. The important thing is that the tutor is giving, telling you when the answer is not right and helping you learn in the process. So this is an example of learning by doing. Next slide, please. And this goes on. The student tries again, some other answer. So he or she is trying to understand the details of the planning method. And next slide, please. And each time there is an explanation until the student gets it right, and there's an explanation for why the student gets it right. Now, how do we do it? What's the sort of AI behind it? So this is what we did. We sat down and we made an inventory of all the concepts we wanted students to learn in this particular class. And there were hundreds of such concepts, techniques, methods, and so on. And then for every concept, we thought about what are the typical misconceptions that students have. So we made a classification, first of all, concept, and then for every concept, all the misconceptions that students have. Now we know that the answer they will give is likely to belong to one of the misconceptions. So that's how the AI agent can recognize it. It already knows that if the student was going to follow this misconception, he or she will give this answer. So when the answer is given, the tutor immediately knows it's that kind of misconception. And then we have built into that AI an answer and explanation so that the agent can give that answer and explanation. So that's how the AI is working. So it requires a lot of work beforehand in terms of building an inventory of all the concepts and then building an inventory of all the misconceptions in all the concepts. So even if the misconception is manifested in a natural language manner, the agent, the intelligent tutor can pick it up because it knows how to categorize these answers that the student is giving. Next slide, please. We can keep on going. So next slide, please. So like I said, there are about 150 exercises across 26 lessons. Six essays per lesson, approximately every 8 minutes. And behind each one of them is a tutor. And the tutor knows, is a specialist in that particular exercise. So we essentially made 150 intelligent tutors. This is an example of AI at scale. It's very data-driven. It's data-driven because the data is coming from the learner, and as the learner is doing exercises, the AI agent is reacting to it. Another aspect of this is that when people build AI, they typically build, often they build AI that might have two tutors or three tutors in it, but this is AI going at scale now. Next slide, please. Okay, so that was one strategy about learning by doing. There is a second strategy that we use, project-based learning. I'm sure you're all familiar with it. We all do project-based learning, but this one was an interesting project for reasons that you will see in a second. So around 1932, a man named J.J. Raven built this test of intelligence called the Raven's Progressive Matrices Test. I'll show you some problems in a second. Now, it has a certain number of problems. It's the most commonly used test of intelligence. I expect all of you have seen problems like that. Now, here is what we're going to ask. We ask all students to do. They have to build, because this is a class in AI, they have to build an AI agent that can pass the Raven's test of intelligence at the end. So each student is building an AI agent of his or her own, which is as good as that of a typical adult at the Raven's Progressive Matrices test. So I'll show you some examples of that test in just a second. Go ahead, please. Next slide. So let me pause here. This is a simple example from that test. A is to B, C is to something. So for the D there, C is to something, there are six choices which are shown in the bottom row. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Which one of them do you think is the right one? Right answer. Okay, just before you go to the next slide, please, Commander Jaiswal, go. Yes, thank you. So the right answer here is number three. And the reason it's the right answer is that you can, going from A to B, you can imagine that you're removing the inside figure, the inside circle, going from A to B. Then you try the same thing on C, and if you remove the inside figure, you're left with a square. But there is no square in the six in the bottom row. So then you say, okay, maybe I'm not removing the inside thing. I'm removing the outside thing and going from A to B, but I'm expanding the inside thing. And then you say, okay, what if I remove the square from C and expand the triangle? And that's how you get to answer three. I'm sure most of you got that answer. And next slide, please. So here is another same thing. A is to B, C is to something. You're given six choices. What is the various choice here? So I can tell you there are sort of two correct answers here, depending upon whether you think A is to B is through rotation, or whether you think A is to B is through reflection. And in fact, human beings like you and I, some pick the reflection choice, some pick the rotation choice. So there are two correct answers. Next slide, please. And so this is Raven's test contains not just 2x2 matrix problems, also but 3x3 matrix problems. And the point here is then that each student has to build an AI agent which is good enough to solve problems like this and do as well on them as the typical human being. And students do that. So this is an example of project-based learning. It takes them the entire 16 weeks, very intensive, but it's the kind of project that's addictive. You know, they get into it, it's engaging, it's challenging. It's like a game. It's like it becomes a competition in the class. Who can get 32 out of 60 or 42 out of 60, and so on and so forth. Next slide, please. Okay, so there are four projects. They have to write codes. There are assignments. I'll not get into details of that, but the assignments are connected with the projects. Go ahead, please. Next slide. And what we found was, this is just for project three, and this was out of just 36 problems, sorry, out of 40 problems. And the median was about 27, and the best students got about 38 out of 40 problems right. And so this is about the performance of a typical adult human being. So the point being that in teaching AI, we already are using AI, in the sense that we are challenging the students to build their own AIs of human level intelligence. Next slide, please. Okay, so that was one meaning of using AI to teach AI. We are using AI projects on which there is ongoing research in our lab. This is cutting edge research. So if you take the proceedings of AAAI, for example, that Commander Jaiswal was talking a few minutes back about, you will see in these proceedings, typically there are a few papers on Raven's Progressive Matrices test. It's really cutting edge research. And we're asking students to look at the cutting edge research and build their own projects. Okay, so that was one part, how to make online education accessible and affordable, very cheap cost. We are talking about, but we're talking about master's level in AI. So now let's look at the second question. How do we make it really high quality, really efficient and effective? And my answer is, let's use AI, and I'll show you how. Let's go to the next slide, please. So when we talk about online education, and I'm sure you have done some online learning by now, all of us have, and I know that in India, it's a big thing as it is in the US, there are three major problems that occur. First, there is no teacher presence. So, you know, people create these videos and they sort of deliver it, but you can't talk to the teacher, which is very annoying because in a physical classroom, you can actually talk to the teacher. Second problem, next slide, please, is that there is no social presence. So, you know, learning is a social presence process. We learn from each other. But in this particular case, there is no other students that you can talk to because everything is online. You're facing a computer. Whereas in a physical classroom, you're facing not just the teacher and perhaps a computer, but also other classmates, which is very useful. And third, next slide, please. And the third problem is that online videos are really tiring and long and boring, like I had talked to you earlier. So how do we make them cognitively engaging so students feel engaged and motivated and you know, really get into it? So that's when learning occurs, if good, efficient, effective learning occurs. Next slide, please. So now I show you some examples of what we did for teacher presence. And I'll talk to you, next slide, please. And I'll talk to you about Jill Watson that Commander Jaiswal referred to a little bit earlier. So we have built some AI agents that actually live 24/7 in this online classroom. They are constantly answering questions from students. So I might be in Atlanta and maybe I'm sleeping and someone from India asks a question. There is a, you know, 9.5 hour difference or 10.5 depending upon the season. And I might be sleeping at that time. So I'm not available to answer the question. But someone from Mumbai or New Delhi or Chennai or Kolkata might ask a question. I want that question to be answered immediately. So these AI agents are just living in the world now, in the online world, and answering questions even when I am sleeping. The next slide, please. So this is what happens. So in this online class, there is a discussion forum. It's built by a company called Piazza. So it's called the Piazza Discussion Forum. And you can see what is happening. You don't have to go into details. We don't have to get into all the details of the Piazza Discussion Forum. But I'll point out here that at the bottom center, you will see something like 11,000 total contributions. So that is the number of messages that students, 200 students, are posting across the semester. Now, I can tell you 11,000 contributions is like reading 100 emails every day for the next 100 days. And you know, no one has the time to do that. So I didn't have the time to do it. A human teaching assistant didn't have the time to do it, and which creates a problem. Students asking questions, there's no one to answer them. Next slide, please. So we thought that could we do something which might be, I don't want to use the term Turing test because it's a very strong test, but that might do a sort of a micro Turing test. So Turing test, if you recall, is that there is a judge C and the judge is facing a computer A and a person B, except that A and B in this figure on the right side are behind the screen. So the judge doesn't know which one is A and which one is B, which one is a human, which one is a machine. The judge interacts with them at the end. If the judge cannot say which one is a human, which one is a machine, then we say the machine has passed the Turing test of intelligence, human level intelligence. Now, of course, Turing test is very general purpose, and I'm not making any claim of having passed the Turing test. But we wanted to see whether we could build an AI teaching assistant that will answer questions from students. And remember, the students are geographically distributed all across the world. They're asking questions 24/7. And in such a way that students will not even know that it's AI which is answering. The next slide, please. So in fact, in the first version, we use IBM's Watson tool. We have moved away from IBM's Watson tool for reasons that I'll share in a second. And that's why we called it Jill Watson. So we wanted to give it a first name. You will see why we wanted to give it a first name. Next slide, please. And the reason, so here is how Jill Watson works. We looked at all the questions that students ask, about 40,000 questions over the last few years, and we categorized them into about 120 categories. I've shown you only three categories here, category one, category two, three. And for each category, we these 40,000 questions that we categorized into about 120 categories, we already knew the answer that the human TAs had given. All right, so next slide, please. So we had this question answer pairs. Now a new question would come up, and we would use Watson to classify it into one of the categories. Next slide, please. It will do the classification. And next slide. It will pick an answer that a human TA had given previously to that kind of question. Now, of course, there can be only 100, in this particular class, there are about 120 different kinds of questions the students typically ask. But of course, the variation in the questions is can be very large. When is project one due? Is project one due tomorrow? What will happen if I'm late? When will you consider me to be late? So all of these answers are connected with when is the project one due, but students ask those questions in different ways. And Jill Watson gives an answer only if using natural language processing, I'm deliberately going to use the pronoun she to provoke a discussion. She gives an answer if based on natural language processing techniques like simple bag of words, she has a confidence of 97% or higher that she has the right answer. Otherwise, she keeps quiet. Okay, so let's go on, please. Next slide. And so we introduced Jill Watson in the teaching staff, in the teaching team. Here are all the teachers listed. You can see my name at the top, and there are all the rest of them teaching assistants. Jill Watson is there, which is where we wanted her to have a first name as well. And we did not tell the students that Jill Watson was an AI. So insofar as students know, this is the class roster, the teaching staff, and let's see what happens. Next slide, please. And students went about asking questions, as the next slide indicates. Thank you. Initially, when students would ask questions, Jill's answers were not very good. What is the allowed maximum running time? We don't have to worry about the details of the question or the answer. I can tell you this is not a poor answer, because as we are training Jill Watson on the questions, 40,000 questions that we have a repository of data-driven AI, at that particular point, in this particular new class, they have not been sufficiently number of questions, and these questions that are being asked do not necessarily match the 40,000 questions that had been asked earlier, because every class is different. So we constantly retrain Jill Watson. And next slide, please. And as more data comes in, its answers start becoming accurate. Are we allowed to use? And again, we don't have to worry about the technical details. But if you know Python programming, then this is the right answer. This is exactly the right answer. Next slide, please. And it kept on giving answers one after the other without any human intervention. It's completely autonomous, 24/7, anywhere, any place, anytime, anyone. Next slide, please. Sometimes its answers are almost exactly right, but not quite right. So should we be aiming for 1,000 or 2,000 words? It's in the context of writing a homework assignment. And Jill Watson said there isn't a clear word limit, but it's important to explain your design. And a student picks up and says, what do you mean by design? What kind of design are you referring to? And that's when a human TA intervenes and says, I think Jill is using design as a catch-all. So Jill is not perfect by any means. I mean, there are many questions she cannot answer, many questions she can. Her answers are often correct. I'll give you numbers in just a second, but sometimes they're incorrect. Let's move on, please. And so we did not tell the students throughout the semester that Jill was an AI. We told them only after the final examinations are over, and they wouldn't believe us that Jill Watson was an AI, because all throughout the semester, they were interacting with Jill Watson and didn't realize it was an AI, and it was part of the reason, of course, it was doing well was because it was immersed in a pool of human TAs, and the human TAs were kind of helping her along, like you saw where Lalith, one of the human TAs, corrected her. So that was part of the reason. Nevertheless, Jill Watson became students loved it. And that's an example of engaging students, catching them so that they become interested in it. It goes not just teacher presence. Jill Watson is not only acting as a proxy for a teacher, it's also a cognitive presence, because engaging students in something exciting going on. Next slide, please. So now we are in Jill Watson 5. We have moved away from IBM Watson. So I'm not going to say too much about IBM Watson, except to say that for performance reasons, we developed our own several layered classification system using our own homegrown technology that, from at least for this particular application, seems to perform better. No critique of IBM Watson. IBM Watson, of course, is a very powerful engine. It played Jeopardy, as you know, and did fantastically well there. But just for this particular set of questions, our semantic technology seems to perform well. Next slide. So now, so in 2020, it is giving answers of many different kinds. Will we have office hours this semester? And so these answers are now coming from the class syllabi, because as you know, we all have been students, and we know that no student ever, first of all, teachers don't write good syllabi. And second, students either don't read the syllabi, or even they read it, they don't find the information, they ask the same questions again and again. But look at the bottom. The student, Jill Watson is asking, was my question useful to you? And depending upon how the student answers yes or no, Jill Watson learns from the process. So Jill Watson is constantly improving his performance. Next slide, please. It is another example. When do labs start? It is a kind of routine, frequently asked questions that don't require deep engagement. Next slide, please. And so performance of Jill Watson has continued to improve. At this particular point, our coverage is about 95% or so. Precision, or the correctness, is about 85% or so. And valid is an interesting question. So what we found was, initially, students would ask all kinds of questions of Jill Watson. What is the meaning of life, for example? And unfortunately, Jill Watson couldn't answer that question. Or questions like, can I take you out on a date? And Jill Watson didn't know how to answer their questions. Because students were asking questions that were really invalid, were outside its competence. But as students have understood Jill Watson's competencies, they have started asking more legitimate or valid questions. And you can see this yellow line is just shooting up, indicating that students are adjusting their expectations of Jill Watson and acting accordingly as time has passed by. Next slide, please. And so now we do something different. Jill Watson now comes in various names. We don't use the name Jill Watson anymore, any particular class. So now all TAs are working under a fictitious name, so that you can't go and look under Commander Bharat Jaiswal or Ashok Goyal and check them on Google and see they're real humans. Everyone is working under a fictitious name. At the end, we do a poll of the students. Which one do you think was AI? And now there can be multiple AIs, and I can tell you that sometimes they get the answer right, some they get the answer wrong. So they are saying Stacy Sisko was an AI. There's a green bar, third from bottom, and they are right about it. But they also think that Michael Hageman is an AI, and Michael Hageman, I can assure you, is very much a human being. So the point here being that he, you know, not claiming anything of a Turing test, but that, you know, in some ways, in more ways than one, I showed in the Raven's Progressive Matrices test, here again, AI, some aspects of AI in very limited, very narrow domains, not general purpose AI, but in narrow domains, is beginning to approach a human level where it's hard for people to say whether it's human or AI. Next slide, please. Okay, so but does it really help? Does it have an impact on, this can be good fun in games, but does it help? So we looked at the learning science literature, as Jill Watson gives answer, we can look at the answer Jill Watson is giving and do a personality test. You, I'm sure, are familiar. You can do personality tests based on natural language answers. They give different people with different personality use different words in their natural language answers. So we did it for Jill Watson, and then we compared it with the kinds of personality traits that effective teachers have based on the learning science literature. Turns out, surprisingly, that Jill Watson has some of the same kind of personality traits based on her NLP responses, natural language responses, as effective teachers do. Let's move on, please. Now, I want to go through the entire thing. But the really interesting part is this, which I, one slide back, please. So the really interesting part is that feedback delayed is feedback denied. Students want to get the answer to the question now. And what this graph is saying is that the longer is a delay in feedback, poorer the student performance. And because Jill Watson could give an answer immediately, students remain engaged. On the other hand, if they were to wait for me to get up and look at it, about some human teaching assistant, look it up, it might be 12 hours because we are all busy people. We might be sleeping or busy. And you know, the student has moved on, lost motivation and engagement. So I think Jill Watson seems to be improving engagement and therefore performance. Next slide, please. But there is another thing, you know, how do we build a Jill Watson for every single class in the world? I want to build a Jill Watson for every single class in the Indian Navy, for example. Every single class that every soldier or sailor is taking. And there are now thousands and tens of thousands of such classes. You can think of middle school and high school. If you're going to ask a middle school teacher to build a Jill Watson for himself or herself, that's unlikely to happen. Can we use AI to create AI? So Agent Smith is a new technology we have developed, and I'll just mention that in 15 seconds to you. So here is what happens. Agent Smith is doing machine teaching. Jill Watson is the student. The instructor is, supposing I am the instructor. Jill Watson is the student, changing the roles here. Agent Smith is going to learn from me and teach Jill Watson. The word Agent Smith is coming from the Matrix movie. If you recall the Matrix movie, Neo was the protagonist and Agent Smith was the antagonist. And Agent Smith had this amazing capability of cloning himself. So Agent Smith is essentially building clones of Jill Watson. For every class, give me the class documents. The course creator gives me the class documents. You enter the course data. Agent Smith spits out a Jill Watson for you. So now we have come to a point where we can build a Jill Watson for you using Agent Smith in about 15 hours of work. So still a lot of work. And I don't know whether every middle school teacher can spend 15 hours, but it's a lot less than hundreds of hours that it used to take. Next slide, please. So this is another sense of using AI to teach AI, because we are using AI, Agent Smith, to teach AI, Jill Watson. So I said in the beginning when I was telling you about the title, there are different two meanings. This is the second meaning. So now actually we are using AI to teach humans, but we're also using to teach other AI, which then help teach humans. So I find it really fascinating. So let's go on, please. Come on, Lydia, as well. So we said that teacher present, but also social present. There is no social engagement there. So now we ask all students to build, to introduce themselves. And as they introduce themselves, let's move on, please. Jill Watson understands enough about students' introductions that it can give an answer. Nice to meet you. Before starting this program, this is being automatically generated by Jill Watson on the fly. Now notice here, there are serious ethical problems coming in here. Jill Watson is saying, when I took this class, it really changed how I think about AI. Jill Watson has never taken a class. So in a way, Jill Watson is not being very honest here. How does it come up with this answer? Because we already have similar introductions from students who had taken them earlier, the class earlier, and we know the answers that the human TAs had given them. So Jill Watson is picking up on the closest response that it can find that a human TA had given and reproducing it here. So it looks really intelligent, but in the process, there are serious ethical problems arising here. Let's move on, please. So here are new examples. Now the new version for social process here can build a buddy system. So here are some students. So they are engaging in a negotiation with Jill Watson. Jill Watson is acting like a matchmaker now. This AI TA is acting as a matchmaker and says, well, you're from Thailand and here's someone else who is from Singapore. Maybe you want to connect with each other. Or you're from Bangkok in Thailand and here is somewhere in Chiang Mai in Thailand and you want to connect because it's a geographically distributed class. So this is how it builds a buddy system. Next slide, please. Or based on students' hobbies, like there are two players who really love to play chess, for example. So to build a sort of a social process, and this we found that students really find this very powerful, because one of the biggest problems in online learning is the sort of social isolation, just facing a computer, and we are helping break the ice. Next slide, please, because I want to keep on moving on. Cognitive presence. So I talked about three problems: teacher presence, social presence, cognitive presence. I've already talked a little bit about cognitive presence. Next slide, please. We enhance cognitive presence. We engage the students in two ways, through the tutors. Next slide. to the tutors. I already showed you that. And second, next slide. And the second strategy for engaging the students is through project-based learning that I already showed you. So next slide, please. Thank you. Okay. So now I have covered. Let's just pause here for a second, Kamala, as well. So by now I have covered how to. So this project-based learning. Next slide. So now I'll show you. Is this all of this effective? Does it actually work? So fall 2014, more than 6,000 students have taken this class. More than 3,000 students have interacted with it. More than 100 human TAs have interacted with it. So we have some good numbers to support them. Next slide, please. And what we are finding out is that perhaps because of the presence of these AI TAs or for reasons, maybe they're conflicting factors, I don't want to give all the credit to the AI TAs, but the completion ratio in this online class is about 80%, which is just a little lower than in the residential classes. The reason it's remarkable is because typically in online classes, it's a really well-known online classes that you might know about, the completion ratio is in single digits. But we are getting completion ratios about the same order as the residential students. Next slide, please. But the same class, blind grading, same TAs, same AI TAs for a residential class. And next slide, please. Same instructor, same syllabus. So we have tried to do an experiment in which the residential students and the online students are as close, as similar as possible as we can make it. And surprisingly enough, the online students, middle column, and assignment after assignment, project after project, final exam after final exam, are doing about as well as the residential students, which sort of, you know, initially blew our mind. How could this be? Next slide, please. So of course we published this, and one of the criticisms that some colleagues made is that maybe this is because of a different demographic difference. Students in the online class are older. They have learned how to learn. They have learned how to fail. They have learned how to solve problems. Whereas an 18-year-old or a 22-year-old is still in the process of gaining that experience, that wisdom that comes with the experience. So now the provost has given us permission to run an online section and a residential section, both for residential students. So the demographic differences disappear. I'll not show you the data right now because I'm running out of time, but I can tell you that the online residential students are still doing about as well as the residential students. So it's not because of demographic differences. Next slide, please. So we are approaching the end of it. Does this, from a social psychology perspective, does it really result in effective learning? Next slide, please. And so social psychologists say there are three measures: intrinsic value of the course, cognitive strategies, cognitive engagement, self-efficacy, meaning can students learn on their own? And not without getting into all the details, these numbers are all on a scale of 1 to 7, and this 5.6 or 5.7 are considered to be very high numbers for most classes, even for residential classes. Interestingly enough, the confidence in teaching support is also very high. You know, it's a 6.085 or 5.8. So let's move on, please, Commander Jaswal. And so on all of this, it really seems to be doing very well. And interestingly enough, this confidence in teaching support is increasing. Even after students know their AI teaching assistants, they seem to be doing fine. Next slide, please. I want to end this so that we have some time for question answers. So there are three challenges coming up. For the first time, we can now do human AI interaction at very large scales. And not just human AI interaction, but AI enabled human interaction. Next slide, please. The second challenge is, can we build for every class, every teacher, and I will say every parent in the world? You know, both of my sons are now grown adults. But when they were in fourth and sixth grade, at that time I used to help them with their homework. And if they had a question and I didn't know the answer, like when is the homework due? They didn't know the answer, there was no teacher available. Can we not build a Jill Watson for every parent? So next slide, please. And so that's why we build this Agent Smith, so that every parent, every teacher and principal, we are not there yet, can spend some hours and build his or her own, use AI to create AI. And next slide, which is just last two slides. And the third is challenges, and this is a sort of a really tricky one, and I'm struggling with it. I don't have good answers to it. This has become an unplanned social experiment. When we started in 2014, we had not imagined all of this would occur. At that time, we were simply building AITAs. But now these AITAs are living in the human society. And it's raising all kinds of new issues that, from a sociological, anthropological perspective, how does the human discourse change in the presence of AI? Do humans start asking different kinds of questions? Do the expectations change? What are the ethics of it? What happens to humans when AI can live and work and learn and play among us? What will human society look like that? So last slide. One more slide, the last slide. So there are two challenges opening up. I think one challenge is we know a lot about human cognition and learning by now. So what new AI technologies can we develop that can make education in a data-driven way more accessible and affordable, more efficient and effective? And I suggested some solutions to you. But there is a second issue coming up. Given what we know about human mind, human cognition, and AI, can we not invent new models of learning? Brand new models that no one has ever thought about. We should be able to do that. AI should be enabled to us to think in ways that none of us has ever thought about. But what are those new ways so that education becomes accessible to everyone in India and across the world? And not just any kind of education, but a high quality, top-notch quality education. And last slide, please, Kamala Jaiswal. I just want to acknowledge all of my teammates. This is a team that worked on Jill Watson. As you can see, it's again a very international team. It's just so exciting to work with them, really smart people, all the credit is due to them. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Now I would request the audience kindly raise the hand if they have any particular question, or they may also type their questions. We have some questions with us. So.
Good evening, sir. This is Komodo Patni, CEO of Valsura. Sir, are we heading to a society where homeschooling using the online medium or the AI medium starts becoming the norm? The ongoing pandemic, as it is, suddenly given a hyper boost to the online model. So is it going to sustain after the pandemic is over, or we will revert back to normal? Because ultimately the whole schooling infrastructure and the paradigm has been built on human to human, face to face relationship between a student and a teacher. So the second question is that is this going to be more applicable to higher learning rather than basic learning? And what are the cost factors involved if we have to propagate this model? Because we are aware of the digital tutor program of the US Armed Forces, which costed millions and millions of dollars and nearly a decade to prepare. So while niche universities can follow the model of the vaccine, is it possible to popularize this so that it becomes cost effective and affordable for a normal human being to take access and use this technology?
Commander, those are three excellent questions, sir. Thank you for asking them. I'll try my best to answer them. Let me begin with the first question of homeschooling. You're indeed right. It is homeschooling has become so prevalent because of COVID-19. The schools are closed and a lot of homeschooling is going on. Will it become the norm? Here is my sense. The young children, 4-year-olds, 6-year-olds, 10-year-olds, 15-year-olds, for them, the learning is often teacher-guided. Teacher is critical there. For adults after 18, 20, 24, your age, my age, we are very self-directed in our learning. So you and I still learn, of course, we have to keep on learning throughout our lives, but we don't have teachers. We have learned how to learn on our own. So my sense is, as COVID-19 dissipates, the school system, elementary, middle, high school, there the children will go back to their schools because they need that teacher-guided instruction. But for adults, college and postgraduate, and for adult learners like you and me, I expect it will become much more online. Even after COVID-19 dissipates, the online factor is going to remain. So that's my guess because of the nature of learning. But the other question you raise is also very good. So about the cost. So the first time we built the first Jill Watson, it took us about 1,500 person hours to build it. Because we didn't quite know how to do it. So 15 person hours is sort of one person working almost the entire year, which is a lot of effort. So if you're going to scale Jill Watson to 1 million classes, you know, that means 15, and it becomes 1.5 billion person hours, and that's too much. That's why the cost factor is so high. So the question is, can we bring that 1,500 person hours that it took to build Jill Watson, we have brought it down to 15 person hours. Can we bring it down to 1.5 person hours so that you can build Jill Watson for yourself? And every parent can, and every teacher can, in 1.5 hours of effort. If we can scale it down, then we scale the cost down. And if we can reduce it by a factor of 1,000 from 1,500 to 1.5 hours, then we are beginning to get the kind of efficiencies that you're hinting at. We are not yet there by a factor of 1,000. We are only by a factor of 100 for 1,500 to about 15. We want to get to 1.5. That's where machine teaching comes in. Agent Smith comes in. Can we? So, you know, the paradigm of machine learning is, you know, Commander, you take a lot of data and you look for patterns. In machine teaching, which is what we're trying to do, we're reversing the equation. It's sort of the machine detecting patterns. And we are the learners. We want to change the equation so that we become the teachers and machine becomes the learners. Machine learn from us, from you as a commander, and then the machine goes and teaches other people, younger people, junior people, what you have taught the machine. If we can do that scaling, maybe we can help reduce the cost. Anyway, that's the kind of hope.
So we have a lot of questions pouring in, but before I go for the next question, I would request the audience that you will see a hand icon on the left sidebar. You can click on the raise hand icon, audience. It is not visible in your screen, but it will be visible in audience screen, wherein audience can raise a hand and I will be able to allow them to speak. And so I will be asking another question, which is from Commander D.K. Singh. Sir, with so much advancement in AI and its proliferation in our lives, is there any model yet to develop consciousness in AI to further mimic humans and in that sense make learning more effective?
That's another great question and tough question. So you're asking me tough questions. Thank you. The issue of consciousness is, of course, a very difficult one. In what way are humans conscious? We suddenly think we are conscious, and we are conscious in some sense. One way in which people are trying, there's two ways in which people are trying that are two broad categories. One way is that, you know, typically when we build AI so that AIs know something about the world. But can we build an AI so that it knows something about itself? I'm sorry, am I audible? Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, we can hear you. If any audience would like to speak, I will announce, then please speak. Sir, please continue to answer the
question. Sure. So that's one way. So that there is some kind of metacognition. We are not just thinking about the world like you and me. We are thinking about ourselves. So you and I can ask you some questions like, why did you do this? Why did you join the Indian Navy? And you can give me a good answer to that because you have some consciousness about yourself, about your own mental processes. So that's one way in which people are trying to give AI agents a model of itself, not just a model of the world. The second way in which people are trying to do is through perception. As an agent sees something, can we build in the agent some notion of not just seeing something, but of knowing that it's seeing something. So it's not just that I'm looking at the commanding officer and the moderator right now, but I know that I'm looking at the commanding officer and the moderator. So those are two ways in which people are trying to build consciousness in machines, but I think we are very far away from it. So I said that AI was beginning to get human-level capabilities. But only in very, very narrow domains, not in this sort of general purpose domain or this high level issues like consciousness. We are very far away from you.
Oh, sir, we have a question from Captain Saubhagya. Sir, you may please ask your question directly, sir.
Sir, good morning, sir. Sir, I wanted to know at the present state where AI is in, do we have a system of establishing the credibility of the answers which the setup gives? So I have fed in certain questions by artificial learning. It has evolved some answers, but is there a way to prove the credibility, or can we rate it as a percentage that the answer is, say, 50% right or 80% right? Is there any such way to do that?
Yeah, that's a very good and a very important question also. We want to establish trust between machines and AI, machines and humans, between AI and humans. And that connects with the issue of credibility. And how do we establish trust? So partly it is a result, exactly as you pointed out, about performance. Whether its performance is high enough that humans can start trusting it. But there is another aspect of that, and that is explanation. So part of the reason you and I, we don't know each other, but we, generally speaking, trust each other. And the reason is because if you were to do something, I can ask you questions and you can give me good explanations. There is another notion that comes in called the theory of mind theory. And here is the idea. You have a theory of how my mind works, and I have a theory of how your mind works, and that's part of the reason why we trust each other. Unfortunately, AIs do not have a theory of human mind, and humans don't have a theory of AI mind. How do we build this mutual theory of mind? Big challenge for AI.
Thank you, sir.
So we'll take one more last question from Captain Sanjay Sharma. So he will be, I've just enabled his mic, he'll be speaking shortly. Meanwhile, I'll take one question, which is from Captain P.P. Singh. Are there any contemporaries
yes,
of AI? Yes, sir, we can hear you. So please continue your question, sir.
Okay. Dr. Goyal, I have a question on the quantum of learning, which is assigned to a particular course. How do I decide, okay, if I take an AI course, for example, applied to teaching AI, how do I decide? And thereafter, this question extends to the larger domain of applied field of technology, where I'm trying to fit a certain content. Now, this question is inspired when I teach my daughter physics. I find the amount of content is so huge. Firstly, I thank God that I've been born 50 years earlier rather than in the poor girl's place. So how do we fit the quantum and decide what is the right quantum? Thank you.
Great question. This is a part of the reason why I talked about efficiency. There's a lot of echo now.
Audience, mute your mic. Sir, please continue, sir.
So part of the reason I talked not only about effectiveness, but also efficiency, or related to what you were saying, Captain, if I'm saying your rank right, and I apologize if I'm not saying it right. By efficiency, I meant almost exactly the same thing. What we expect our children and our students to learn is such a huge amount that it's not only that learning has to be effective, learning has to become very efficient. And that raises all kinds, and that also connects with the commanding officer's question. Because if it's efficient, then it becomes cost effective. It also connects with your question. And so it is not just that at the end we want students to master such a certain amount of material, but we want a student to be able to master the same material in 6 weeks rather than in 6 months, so that the student can cover more content. And that's what I meant by efficiency. And I think one way to do that is, to understand what kind of misconceptions students have and what kind of learning gaps they have. All students have learning gaps. If we can identify them precisely, then we can intervene more precisely. I think part of the difficulty that I had when I was teaching my children when they were much younger was that they would say something, and they're smart kids, but it was very hard for me to say exactly what is missing, exactly what should I teach them and how. Their precision was missing. If we can use learning data analytics to make that more precise, then maybe we can improve the efficiency. Sorry for this long-winded answer.
So one last question for the session today, sir, from Commodore A.G. Raut. Sir, the question is not pertaining to the AI particularly, but where it's for the policies, that where are we about the acceptance of online course certificates vis-a-vis regular course certificates for jobs and education? Are there any improvement happening in US in particular regards?
Yes, so credentials has become a major issue, partly because exactly of the kind of questions that you are raising and we are discussing here. So what many US universities do, including Georgia Tech, but Georgia Tech is not the only one, is to go to the notion of micro-credentials. So the idea is this. Instead of saying that he took a class in, say, history of the world, just to make take an example, can we split history of the world into narrower segments? And did he take a class, cover the unit on history of India? Did he or she cover a unit on history of Europe and things of that kind? And then for each one of those micro credentials, not a semester long or a degree long, for those sort of shorter, smaller units, then whether we can do online education as effectively, so it's not even needed that we need to say it's online. So that's the way the Georgia Tech and many other major universities are moving towards this micro credentials.
I would like to formally thank you, sir. Thank you, for enlightening the audience on various perspectives of artificial intelligence to support teaching and learning. The topics like learning by example, project-based learning, virtual classroom were very informative. Remarks of students' response on Jill Watson were really fascinating, and using Agent Smith to teach Agent Jill Watson was really enthralling. As my commanding officer, Commodore Ajay Patni, brought out, that in the prevailing COVID-19 times, the online education and using AI for it has gained very high importance. So I would like to apprise you that we as a Center of Excellence for Big Data at INS Valsura are also working on an AI-based teaching training management system. And sir, also we have submitted a paper in AAAI, IAAI track this time. Thank you once again for your session, sir. And I'm really glad that you joined us today. Good night, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. Let me take 15 more seconds of your time. I was born and brought up in India. As I grow older, I want to repay. India gave me enormous amount of opportunities, and I want to repay back. So if I can ever help in any way, please call on me. I'm here. I want to repay.
So thank you. Thank you so much for your kindness, sir. We will definitely be in touch with you, sir. Sir, it will be a great opportunity for me as a Center of Excellence for Big Data to connect with you for some future research projects. Thank you very much, sir, and good night.
Good night.